Welcome to the new
radio
network. The new power hour.
Oh, what's happening, CC? They still call it the White House, but that's a temporary condition, too. Can you dig it, CC? To each his reach, and if I don't cop, it ain't mine to have. But I'll be reaching for you, because I love you, CC. Right on. There's a lot of chocolate cities around. We've got Newark, we've got Gary. Somebody told me we got L.A. And we're working on Atlanta. But you're the capital city. Get down. Moving in on you. Can't you feel my breath? All up around your neck. Hey, CC, they say you jive and game and can't be changed. But on the positive side, you're my piece of the rock, and I love you, CC. Can you dig it? Hey, we didn't get our 40 acres and a mule, but we did get you, CC. Yeah. Moving in around ya. God bless CC and his vanilla suburbs. What's happening, blood? What's up, man, Black? Brother Black, blood even. Yeah, just funny, man. Getting down. Blood to blood, players to ladies. The last percentage count was 80. You don't need the bullet when you got the ballot. Are you up for the downstroke, CC? Chocolate City. Are you with me out there? And when they come to march on you, tell them to make sure they got their James Brown pass. And don't be surprised if Ali is in the White House. And Reverend Ike, Secretary of the Treasury. Richard Pryor, Minister of Education. Stevie Wonder, Secretary of Fine Arts. And Miss Aretha Franklin, the First Lady. Are you out there, CC? A chocolate city is no dream. It's my piece of the rock. And I dig you, CC. God bless Chocolate City and its vanilla suburbs. Can y'all get to that? Can't get enough. Demo funk. Demo funk. And we funky too. Right on, Chocolate City. Yeah. Get deep. Real deep. We just got New York, I'm told.
You never offer any solutions to our community. Challenge accepted. My name is Candace Owens, and you are watching my new blog series, The Declaration. You know that expression, if it ain't broke, don't fix it? Okay, well, the inverse of that expression is that if it is broke, we should fix it. And do you want to know what's broke? Voting for Democrats every 4 years results in buyer's remorse every 4 years later. Why don't we try something different, guys? Because everything else is racist. Right. So here's how fear politics works. My name is Ashley Evans, and I want the black vote. All I have to do is sprinkle the word racist on anything that is opposed to my agenda. Ready? Donald Trump? Racist. Republicans? Racist. Leaving the Paris Agreement? Racist. Hillary Clinton? Not racist, which is why I'm with her. The Democrats have figured out that fear absolutely dominates black people politically to the point of socioeconomic paralysis. Racism has pretty much become our boogeyman. We are not, I repeat, not living through the civil rights era, and we need to stop acting like we are. America, despite what CNN may tell you, is not a racist country. And when it was, despite what CNN may tell you, the Democrats were at the helm of it. Personally, when I hear the word racism nowadays, I assume it's just something that the Democrats don't want me to see, and so I intentionally go pursue it. But don't take it from me. Let's take a look at what our blind allegiance to the Democratic Party has earned us in territories that they are dominating. Flint, Michigan, not only one of the country's poorest cities, but also listed recently as one of the most dangerous. They don't even have clean drinking water. Detroit, a complete and utter urban failure, and I am not just talking about Eminem. They've got crime, they've got poverty, take your pick. Philadelphia, I feel like they win poorest major city almost every year. Not the greatest superlative, but you know, Democrats. Of course, we can't talk about poverty in crime-ridden cities without bringing up Chicago, another Democratic stronghold where 75% of those murdered are black and 71% of the murderers are also black. But we're not supposed to care about that, right? If we ask the Democrats running those cities why were there already 636 shootings that resulted in death this year? They'll tell us, look, the KKK, look, Charlottesville, look. The KKK is rallying in Charlottesville, where no black people died. And so what do we do in response? Do we focus on the real issues? No, of course not. We riot. We get arrested. We lose focus on what actually matters. Blue cities that have a Democratic stronghold are absolute disasters, and we can no longer afford to ignore the facts. Even the blue Connecticut, my home state, is headed down a bad path. I mean, apparently we looked at Chicago and thought, that seems like a sound economic plan. Keep taxing the productive citizens and rewarding those that do absolutely nothing. Let's see how fast we can bankrupt this place. The time is now for black minds to be unleashed and to revolt against the politics of fear. The question we should be asking ourselves is,
look how much African American communities have suffered under Democratic control. What do you have to lose by trying something new?
Absolutely nothing, Mr. President. Thank you guys so much for watching.
Director for Turning Point USA with chapters on college campuses all across the nation, and making a move into these Democrat dens as we go along. Welcome to the New Power Radio Network, the New Power Hour. I am your host, Clifford Lowry, the new Black Republican, a.k.a. Red Pill Washington, D.C., and American communities all across the nation. Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back to the Saturday Night Bill. You know how we do it. I appreciate you for coming on through as we get down to it and wrap up this series on white supremacy. Before we get to the topic, you know, as a way of warming up a little bit, the excitement of the midterms is upon us, folks. Midterms 2018, the hype, the energy, and the excitement is at absolute historic level. You know, usually with these elections, the hype is surrounded, you know, the presidency every 4 years, you know, everybody jump in and all types of stuff break loose for about a year or so going into the major election. And on the midterms, you usually get a drop off. But midterms 2018 has some attention surrounding it like I have never seen before. November 2018, folks, it's going all the way down. And that's a good thing. You know, in a constitutional republic system, it is absolutely necessary that you have an informed electorate, an informed voter base, so that when individuals exercise their right to elect a representative of their choosing to carry forth their specific interests, it is based on an informed decision. An informed choice. Otherwise, you end up with a de facto totalitarian type of system of governance in their respective communities. It's not totalitarian by law, but if you are not informed, it ends up being a totalitarian thing where the rules, the laws, the regulations, the control over hundreds of billions of public dollars is concentrated in the hands of a very few. More times than not, put into office, not from a mandate, they are defaulting, especially in the Black American community, in the office based on extreme voter apathy, which I believe is by design as well. Now, I know we got our neither party folks out there. That to me is some nonsense. When you look at the Black American demographic out in the country, and especially so in urban centers, these communities is under the solid and long-standing for 70, 60, 50 years of democratic regimes. That's the only thing that's going down in black community. So to say, neither party is a highly misleading statement that has absolutely no foundation or merit. There is no Republicans there. So let's call it what it is. If you're disappointed in the politics of your community and you have grown to be apathetic, that is due to being under the control of, in the black American community, I call it the black faith Democrat misleader, who come with promises year after year to get your vote only, to leave you high and dry until the next time, and they come with more promises. We got the numbers. You know, Red Pill DC is a test, it's a network. We got the numbers. When you're looking at the black American community, then we definitely want to deal with the American community as a whole, regardless of color, we have to attack those black American Democratic Dems. When you look at the number across the board, 15% voter turnout, 20% voter turnout. On average, it's somewhere like 28% across the United States of registered voters who are actually participating more acutely down on the city and county level. What do you mean? They not doing nothing for us. With those numbers, of course they not going to do anything. One, they're defaulting into office, not by any majority, a mandate by a long shot. The black Americans have been duped into surrendering their right to participate in the governance of their respective community. And where has that gotten? Mass displacement is going on. Entire communities being displaced. And out in our black strong suburb where we were coming up, we're seeing these people being pushed out into those areas, and they are under pressure of mass displacement. And all of this is taking place under the watch of Democrat representatives. Ceded the right. We don't vote. So nothing changed. Well, folks, you know the deal. You know how we do. If nothing changes, nothing changes. If you keep doing the same thing and expect a different result, that is called delusion. You want different results, you have to do different thing. Man, that's a law of nature right there. You can't get around. So, we got our work cut out in these black American Democrat dens. But we have it as a vision of Red Pill Washington, D.C. That this will be the absolute last election cycle where this 95% Democrat then is presented to the people as the only option. We must, across America, boldly bring before the people an alternative view, or less, people are looking at continued displacement, replacement, and dissatisfaction. Turning Point USA will be in Washington, D.C. this weekend. There are up over 350, it may be 400 by now. It is sold out for a three-day youth conservative leadership conference. They sold it out with absolutely no publicity from the radio, from the news here in Washington, D.C. You wouldn't even know it's in town. 350 from across the nation. Now, if we had Mary J. Blige was in D.C. not long ago. And Mayor Bowser act like, you know, we have overcome because Mary J. was here. Or if we had an entertainer, Cardi B, or somebody like that, man, the internet will be buzzing. The young folks are getting together in D.C. and they are going to get down. But here, you have 350, 35 and under, young men and women getting together, participating in a mind-enriching experience where we come together and we enjoy each other's company, but we're not pole dancing. They're coming together. The future, the leaders of tomorrow, being properly engaged as impressionable young minds should be. Shout out to my young guns out there over at UDC. We got something with Howard, but we ain't gonna talk about that until you know it's a done deal. But thank you to the young guns for the hookup. We're excited about that. We'll see what comes of it. But Turning Point will be in D.C. We got the big brother, Brandon Tatum. He's doing quite well out there. My main man, Charlie Kerr. I like Charlie, man. Charlie off the chain. They got a whole Charlie back, man. Charlie Kerr, man. He goes hard. The legendary Stacey Dash. They used to call her Crazy Stacy, but it don't seem so crazy now. She'll be in the building. Dr. Ben Carson will be in the building. I hear Mr. West will be in the building. And the President of the United States, the Honorable Donald J. Trump, has put it on his schedule to come and address the 350 plus young men and women who will be in Washington, D.C. starting on the 26th of October, running for 2 days to participate in this historic leadership conference. Why aren't they talking about that? Why isn't the politicians and the council members in the 93.9 talking about this. Why they mad? They're not talking about this because the red pill movement is developing outside of the established gatekeeper. And that is a huge threat, folks. See, they ain't got no control over this. They can't send you the rapper to dance it off the side of a mountain. They can't send Reverend Chicken Bone to put the hex on it. They can't send the self-appointed moral authority to sanction. They can't send the black-faced Democrat misleader to bamboozle it. They can't send the racial advocate, the paid change agents is what they call them. Can't send them either. It's outside of all of their control. That's why they mad. Pandora's box has been opened and it cannot be closed. It starts with a spark. And from that spark, it spread. Red pill. American communities all across the nation, and in terms of the Black American community, it's high time we had an exodus, and I am proud to announce that Red Pill DC, we have 5 young ones sponsored, paid for, room, board, and food, so that they can give all of their attention to the honor of the President of the United States addressing them, even when the mayor of Washington, D.C. is ignoring momentous occasions. Got a chance to hang out with the D.C. Young Republicans? Huh. They are a registered Republican group here in Washington, D.C. It was a pleasure hanging out, you know, with them. The age group varies up and down. They do a monthly event over here on Capitol Hill and in various spots in Washington, D.C. They bring in some very great conservative speakers from across the country, a meet and greet type of thing. It was an honor and a privilege to hang out. You know, we're talking about, you know, what can the D.C. young Republicans in Red Pill D.C. do? Can we do something? So hopefully, you know, as we move and we begin to open this broadcast up, because we're really going to split them. We're going to take it on a history path because people are liking the history in it. But then we must continue to move forward because we're on a 2-year time frame. So we got to keep it pushing so we can meet our goals. But I look forward to bringing as a guest speaker or an interview or something. Some of them young and from D.C. Young Republicans. And, of course, we got UDC. Man, they tearing it up in their group, man. And that's a perfect segue into the disclaimer. You know, as we've been doing this series, White Supremacy Claps Over Myth, I've been having to do a disclaimer on each and every episode, man. My golly gee. You know, it is hard to go into history, particularly in the Black American community, because, you know, we try to keep it objective, folks. I'm not putting this stuff out of here, you know, as a badge of racial superiority or a badge of anger or a badge of victimhood or abashed and say, look at here, look at here. We're putting this information out here because what we're doing, punching holes in a myth that's deeply embedded in the Black American community that we just won't let go. And that's the myth of white supremacy. I'm putting it as general as I can. These line of comment, we're going to get into it, but these line of comment are based on, you know, we got this going into two separate groups. We got over 600 comments. We went through each and every last comment, and with the Black American, or what we're assuming to be, you know, those pictures can be misleading. Those internet trolls, I tell you, that's something else. They're good. And even if it's the trolls putting in these troll-like comments, we're addressing them anyway, but I'm putting it in a general way so that we can deal with these things objectively. Like when you're dealing with history, you got to be able to have an objective mind in order to extract the value out of history. Because see, the history that we're putting in the young folks' minds is a tainted history. So you got a democratic socialist like Miss Cortez up in New York putting across straight Nazi platform. That's something new. And Bernie Senile Sanders putting across platforms that have been tried over and over again in history and have been found wanting. But they seem new only through the ignorance of what has preceded. And even when we do go into history, many of us are using it in a subjective manner, and the subjective element is emotions. That's fed by a deeply embedded, poisonous, toxic, race-based philosophy. What love got to do with it is what Tina Turner said. So we're trying to deal with this stuff objectively. That's why I put it in a general manner. I could have did 10 episodes on the inner working of the slavery system off the top of my head alone. I'm not bragging, but the work has been put in. I didn't do that because I'm not trying to go down that rabbit hole. And the surprising thing is, I was worried about, you know, as we were talking about it, and, you know, I'm kicking the notes over and some thoughts and putting this particular series together, I was worried about offending my white listeners. But we looking at the comments, man, almost unanimously, all of them like, man, go ahead, Red Pill DC, you know, like, damn, am I the Martin Luther King of white people? What's going on? It's a side of their story that's being suppressed, that the myth of white supremacy won't let them get out. They ain't take offense to it at all. A lot of that stuff, you know, was some hard stuff to hear about yourself. Over on the Black side, we have got to go to the core. We're going to get it out. We're going to do an alpha bombardment, man. We're going to take an arrow and shoot it right through that toxic and poisonous atom, and we're gonna bust it wide open, so that we can unleash the power of independent thought, and hopefully that independent thought sparks a love for learning for yourself, so that you can have and an informed intellect. And with an informed intellect, you can make informed choices. Because doing these same things we've been doing can't be an informed choice. That's like the old 45 records. The things just keep on jumping. So that's the disclaimer right there. Let's go ahead on and get into it. I'm a bit under the weather, so I'm going to try to get through this without my voice giving out or going into a coughing fit. If so, we'll call it like it is. This is enough in part 1, 2, and 3 to get the picture. White supremacy, collapse of a myth, part 4, the crossroads. In episode 1, 2, and 3, we went into a general history. And really, I could have took 1, 2, and 3 and spread that out over maybe a year. You know, America has a short history, but a very complicated one. And a lot of times, particularly on the Black American side, when we're being taught history, we're being taught in a very simplistic way that usually starts with, we start carting you over here in a boat to be the beast of burden, you know, for white people in the pick that cot. Now, certainly, that did happen, but there was a lot of history in it. It wasn't as simplistic as white people subjugating us. It was a long process that contained racial intermixing, alliances, disputes, treaties, trade. And this history, really, the way I'm giving it, you can take it and put it on different cultures, different civilizations, different time frames, and this pattern would repeat itself. But here we're talking about America. So there was a lot of intermixing and alliances and disputes and treaties and trades. You had the Indians and the French against the English, the Spanish and the Indians against the French, the Indians and the English against the French and the Spanish, the Black and the Indians against the English. As a matter of fact, Prince Hall, the father of Black Freemasonry, African Lodge number one. He was initiated into the craft by the British Lodge. See, that comes from a British line. In the American Revolution, the great Prince Hall was loyal to the king. And that was around the time he got initiated. So you had a lot of strange bedfellows that was existing that went across racial lines. It must be understood, in order to see white supremacy what it is, we must know that it was a doctrine used to monopolize business enterprise. It was used to monopolize the business, therefore, it was used to monopolize the productive capabilities of men and women in the production or the result thereof. That's what it was used for. That's what it's been used for throughout history. This is not to say that this racial thing only became a problem in America. I am not saying that. What we are doing is focusing on that. But if you look throughout history, as stated in part 3, you could have a religious doctrine that very well may have great value to human development. But then that doctrine is taken and bastardized and used to justify the subjugation, the conquering, and the exploitation of men and women for their productive capabilities and the control of the product that results from those capabilities. So you had Christians, Muslims, Buddhists, Jews, all, while the core of their doctrine may have great value, there have been men and women that use those things to justify conquering and subjugating people covered with a made-up moralistic philosophy. It wasn't just religion. You had a family name. You had weaponry. If you, especially in the interior of Africa and up in the mountains, you know, your tribe developed along different lines that happened here in America too. And you still got bow and arrows, but I got this bullet right here. You had military supremes that justify degrading and assumed adversary, but really what it is was a target demographic for subjugation. You will always see a made-up philosophy of supremacy right along with it. So it must be understood that the development of white supremacy was a doctrine used to monopolize the business. With the collapse of slave labor, as the slave labor model and the rise of wage labor, it gradually became used to monopolize or limit the labor market, which evolved to be a business within itself. Your labor is a business. You know how those black power people say, man, you no good because you got a job. We need to stop looking at it as a job, man. You are a business unto yourself, and you're selling your labor for the best price you can possibly get, just as the man selling a hat or a pencil for the best price that he can get. You know, that's in direct contradiction, you know, to a slavery thing. Whenever you get a group that say, come on, let's all get together, you go work for me and turn in all your money to the group. And you go do that instead of, if you can't open up the business in the very least, selling your labor to get some gainful employment so you can keep some of the fruits of your labor, run fast. That's slavery, folks. And with the collapse of the slave labor market, you see this American-style doctrine of white supremacy begin to spread over into the culture. Much of what evolved to be racial animosity derived from laws designed to monopolize the business. Especially so after slavery was outlawed. When you were a slave, the doctrine was there. I'm not trying to say it just popped up overnight, but we all clear on what we're dealing with. We're dealing with coming to America up until the 13th Amendment, up until now. And those would we now know is racial animosity and white supremacy really evolved out of laws that was cutting everybody out of the business, because America has always been a melting pot. Look at the history. Everybody came here, and it was convoluted, folks. Very convoluted. It was so convoluted that as the Americans, you know, they came across the Atlantic, they come up from south and then across the Atlantic as they figured it out. And then they started to push west. Now, half the white people didn't want slavery coming to the west because they were going to be cut out the deal. Wherever, history has shown, wherever you found a system based on slave labor, that system eventually reached a point of collapse. Wherever you find it. American, this system was destined to collapse. At the point of emancipation, all of the profit was getting very thin. So much of what evolved to be racial animosity derived from the laws designed to monopolize business. This was especially so after slavery was outlawed, because blacks, now in America, for hundreds of years, stood to dominate the labor market, which was now basically a wage labor system. They also stood to dominate the politics, because you was carting all these black people in here for all these years to do the slave labor. When you look at the writings of great George Washington, these people are good with history, man. Slavery was going on for a couple of 300 years before George popped up on the scene. But we'll go to George Washington, since people know George Washington. You know, George couldn't tell a lie. He chopped that cherry tree, man, I tell you. He had slaves, man. He had a whole lot of land, but when you look in his writings and some of the writings of his lesser known contemporaries, you got to go to these good bookstores to get this stuff. They charge for those books too. But you will see that leading up to the time around emancipation and maybe 50, 60, 70, 80 years before, they were debating the question, what are we going to do? What are all of these black people? They knew the system was going to collapse. History shows slavery systems always end in collapse. It collapses under its own weight. Sort of like socialism. The plantation, socialism, communism are all the same type of system, only to the degree in which it is exercised. So you look at their writings, and they foresaw the problem, you know, in the hype of speculation, because human labor was a highly speculatory enterprise, very profitable. But it was big, big business. Whether you a white being trafficked, black, and whatever it was a highly speculatory investment bubble, like the housing bubble. Slave labor here in America was the same thing. And when you look at these early writings, they foresaw a huge problem. What are we going to do when this speculatory bubble collapsed? And we're stuck with all these black people who now have a monopoly on the labor because they were slaves. Not only that, they were wise. What are we going to do on the political side when those now emancipated slaves got the majority in a lot of southern communities? Are we setting ourselves up for our former slaves to now dominate the very country that we set up? Well, it evolved to be a country. Because when they first came to America, they was just stripping the resources. When the British, the English, when they came to America, it was never thought of as a separate nation. It was a resource. Because Europe was resource starved. They didn't have those resources in Europe. They can get to the outposts of Africa, but they couldn't get down into the interior. So they was constantly finding resources and found the resources that they thought they'd been looking for. Like, man, we don't reach heaven here on earth. As they went down through the Caribbean and South America and up into the Americas, so it was a source of resources that evolved to be a separate nation. And once it evolved to be a separate nation, the question came painfully clear: what are we going to do? Thus, through fear, the promotion of race supremacy took on an ever-increasing cultural aspect. You had a large black labor force, a concentrated black political force. Racial intermixing stood at the front door of emancipation. If left alone, it would have wiped out the original business interests of America. Let me say that again, because that's what it is. You know, that's why, as the whites started going out west, they didn't want slavery, because slavery would undercut them. They didn't live that easy under slavery. Where you think poor white trash come from? I'm not trying to be derogatory in my language, but the labor was bought and paid for through black. How did they survive? So as they went out west, it was a huge fight. Them white folks ain't want no part of that. Because though there was a doctrine of white supremacy with the presence of slave labor, it held them in check as well. The legal perfection of these realities that were in America found itself put into full state sanction by policy in Nazi Germany. Nazi Germany accumulated a cycle of years, which they went into the laws that monopolized the business based on race as the justification to do so. And they created a system of racial extermination. We call it environmentalism, climate change, global warming, pro-choice, abortion, on demand. In Nazi Germany, they called it racial extermination. That was the solution to the problem. It was an extension of those Jim Crow laws. Of those black codes. And they were serious. Now that slavery is out the picture, how are we going to do this? Now, don't get me wrong. I see no harm in racial pride. If white people only wanted to get with white people and live around white people, that's their business. The same thing with black people. You're not going to get me force feeding integration where people don't want it. But where it becomes wrong is when their entire philosophy is falsified to support the conquering, subjugation, exploitation of men and women, both black and white, for control of their productive forces and the products produced thereof. That's where it becomes wrong. That falsified philosophy. Because whites are disadvantaged too. They struggle greatly under slavery. They were held in check by black cheap labor and racial fears due to the reality of genetical annihilation, especially when you put it in a context of a toxic race-based set of laws and falsified philosophy. This fed racial animosity. All of that from laws to monopolize the business develop into a culture. Underneath of it is fear. Fear is how they doing it, folks. And that fear is supported by a tainted and poisonous history. You have these racial advocates who, on one hand, sound like they are promoting black upliftment, but what they are promoting is black inferiority, because you got to be inferior in order for that particular brand of philosophy to work, and it's tied to white supremacy. To teach a child in its formulative years that you were unique and a beast of burden grows up, and it develops a art, a culture, a mindset based on degraded ideas, being taught to it, not only by the established education, but enforced by those black-faced enemy misleaders in our midst today. So you look at the culture of the young, that demonic machine coming out of Hollywood, prancing women around as nothing more than a twirl on the pole, to the extent that when you get a Candace Owens exercising the power of her mind, she then becomes the sellout, because black women ain't supposed to feel that they have to be effeminized in order to advance in this world. What we call it, Brokeback Mountain, is the way to the top. All of this comes from a tainted, toxic, race-based, poison, fallacious philosophy. So the black community was duped. These Europeans came from that chaos that was happening over in Europe. They brought their chaotic political system. Then they came and exploited our shame, our shortcomings. They exploited them to the fact that, or to the degree that, emotions were out of control. Then they came back and said, I got the solution. If only you will follow me. Social justice is the way. What Stevie wanted to say, if you believe in things you don't understand, then you suffer. Because superstition ain't the way. So, what they gave you, us, and social upliftment or racial justice, was a program of complete dependency on the government for the establishment of our equality as God's creation. That's what it did. Woe to the black misleader. Woe to he who sat on a watchtower and watched it happen. Parasitical devils, profiting off of a manufactured lie that has been so poisoned that the people have been made to support the ones who stand at the doorway of their destruction. This will wrap up this particular episode, part four, collapse of white supremacy, collapse of America. We're at the crossroads now. This is coming out of a long train of series, man. I, the work has been put in. I could have did 16 hours straight with it. Doubt if you would have listened to all 16 hours. So I encourage to go all the way back to the beginning and listen to all of these episodes in a row. It'll fall into place. You know, going forward, we're going to branch history off because I like history. We can make some stories out of it. But we got to keep Red Pill moving forward. So we're going to, you know, continue to deal with these issues, but we're going to mix them in. We're going to bring more of the platform, more of current events, mix it all together and proceed from there. The gloves are coming off, folks. The gloves are coming off, man. We ain't got time for games. If you're scared, say you're scared. You know, it ain't nothing wrong. That's the first part of being able to heal. We got to take it all the way back down to that magical number zero. I got a series coming up too, the zero. I did that some years ago. I'm going to bring that back. I'm going to see if I can get Huey Shabazz in to do that one with me. But we're going to go all the way back to the philosophy of the zero, man. You know, and it's going to get harder. We don't have time to be playing with these black Democratic misleaders. Now, like I said, we're going to go across racial lines, but we got to hit the black American community, to my dear people. Man, they're suffering under a black leadership that's public enemy number 1, 2, and 3, and is a cancerous detrimental to the development of an entire demographic who has the world before them, limited only by falsified philosophy. I thank you for tuning in. The New Power Radio Network, the New Power Hour. I am your host, Clifford Lowry, the new Black Republican, a.k.a. Red Pill Washington, D.C., and American communities all across the nation. Until the next time, my best of hope and wishes for much success to you and yours. And if we come across a moment where things seem to be uncertain, just sit back, take a deep breath, and let's say to ourselves, what a wonderful world. Until the next time, peace and soul train.
What must be done? We have God with us. We have Him as our guide. Yes, sir. We don't have to sit around here and ask the question, what must be done? Yes, sir. Get up and let's go and do something.
Yes, sir.
We're trying to do something with whatever the white folks will let us have.
Yes, sir.
We're trying to do something with it to make them feel that they didn't give it over to a bunch of lazy fellows. That want to sit down and turn our face back to them, begging them to carry us right on. When you have been given a chance to go for self, go for self.
Yes, sir.
That the black man of North America have nobody to blame but himself. If he respects himself and do for himself, his once slave master will come and respect him and help him to do something for self. You cannot say that they don't help you to do something for self. They're helping us to go for ourselves. Who would want to help an old horse that don't want to do anything but lay down in the lot?
Right.
Disgusting. Really disgusting.
Yes, sir.
Rouse him up and tell him to get up.
Yes, sir.
You can't pull the tractor, pull the plow.
Yes, sir.
I don't believe in us. Now, in this modern time, laying down on the white man looking for him to give us something to go for. He give you something when he give you freedom.
Right.
You'll be free to do something for self.
Yes, sir.
Well, you got that. Don't now lay down around his doorstep asking him to help you. Go help yourself.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Well, that's right. He takes the shackles off from you and say, now you're free. Go for yourself. Why should you still lay there to his gate? Give me nothing. That's the truth. What are you going to give me now? After he let you go, free to get for yourself. You don't need to blame him now. Blame yourself.
Earth
is lost. Yes, sir. And during the few moments that we have left, we want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
I know your anger, I know your dreams. your personality.